Welcome to Combo Smite, the War Machine and Horde's Battle Report podcast brought to you by an Imperial Lackey, an overpowered Swan, and an angry Elf.
Welcome to Combo Smite. This week's podcast is brought to you by the Cadoran Tailors Association. A good commander needs three things: bravery, daring, and a good velour uniform. And I don't think Irusk has any of those things. My name is Mark, I play Signar and Menoth, and I am willing to sacrifice wave after wave of my men to achieve my goals.
My name's Nick, and this week I was playing Mercenaries.
I'm Aaron, and I play Cadoran Mercenaries, and Irusk definitely has a velour outfit.
He really should. If he doesn't, there's something wrong. So, this week featured a game between Nick's Mercenary Forces and Gavin's Circle, which was actually kind of a cool one, but you'll have to wait to listen to that, because first, we have news and announcements. So, does anyone have any news they'd like to talk about?
Can't think of anything.
Yeah, it was actually a really low news week this week. I think in the post-lock-and-load lull, basically Privateer Press has all been sleeping, and not a lot of announcements coming out. Okay, so as I mentioned, this week's battle report was between the Mercenary Forces and Circle Ouroboros. Why don't we start with you, Nick? What were the lists you were bringing, and why?
Okay, so I was bringing two lists that I think sound pretty awesome, but that I don't have any of the models for. So one of them was the Durgan Pressganger Swarm that I played a couple weeks ago in one of the battle reports that was not on a podcast a couple weeks ago, and that was a lot of fun. This week I want to try a different list, which I also don't own the models for, which is a Gorton 4-star list with Chaozzi. So my list was Gorton, an Earthbreaker, Silas, Nailer of Wishes, Max Assassins with Underboss, 2 units of Eliminators, Tack, Wrong Eye Snapjaw, Bolt Snapper, Rupert for some tough and whatever else, and Thor for the Earthbreaker. So this list, I've seen variations of this floating around. Most notably, I watched a video of a tournament where someone on Endgaming was playing this, like a list similar to this, and it just looked like a lot of fun and just like shenanigans to be had with all that high defense Chaozzi that are just really, really good in melee, and yep. It seemed like it could be a lot of fun.
It's a fascinating list.
Yeah, so, yeah. I had a bunch of proxies, and Aaron lent me his assassins and one of his units eliminators, so that was good. But yeah, it's never as fun to play with proxies, honestly.
I agree. You know, it's one of those things that where a couple of years ago when we were just starting the game, I don't think any of us complained or blinked an eye about using proxies. These days, it feels wrong. So.
Well, you know, we've always been fairly anti-proxy. Like, even when we only had a couple of units, we would just use the units we had.
Yeah, that's true. That's
usually.
True. So, now that you've played the list, anything you change, you feels worth changing?
I don't know if the attack is really worth much. They didn't do anything in this game. It doesn't mean they can't do anything. Like, they're a good unit. Like, I really do like them. And, you know, a couple of magic attacks always go a long way against certain matchups. So, just because I didn't need them in this game doesn't mean they're useless. But, yeah. I mean, there probably are two things I could have spent my points better on. Like, I'm thinking, like, I wouldn't mind having a Tinker in this list. For reasons we will approach later on. So like I could have maybe traded the tack for like maybe a Tinker and Ragman or Gorman or something like that, and it would have been better. So
right. Well, a lot of people forget that the tackers are actually multi-wound infantry, and you know, they're not easy to get rid of.
They're not that hard though. It only takes 121 power attack to kill them. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay,
it
fair enough.
It seems like this list is also full of a lot of units that you haven't ever used. I mean, Wrong Eye Snapjaw, Bull Snapper, the Chaozzi.
That's true, but they were all awesome.
That wasn't my point. My point wasn't to say this list can't work because you've never used its units and it's going to fail miserably. I'm just pointing out the fact that it seems like a very different list for you.
Well, totally, yeah. I mean, the only units in this list that I've even used before are, like, Rupert, Thor, Earthbreaker, Tack. Everything else is basically new, right? Like, So, you know, the majority of the list was all new stuff. So I didn't expect to, like, have a great time with the list. I expected lots of problems with the order of activations and other stuff. And
right. We'll
get to that. But, I mean, you know, I didn't expect to run it flawlessly for the first time. Because, you know, you can't just take a list from the internet and then win. You know, I mean, that doesn't usually work. You have to actually... You have to at least understand, like, even if you haven't played a list before, you have to at least understand how it works together and why it works together in order to actually get anything out of it.
You know, a quick tactical question. Do you feel it's better that if you're testing out new models to test out a bunch of them at the same time? Because if you're going to lose anyways because you don't know how things work, you know, why not do it all at once? Or do you rather, you know, do one new unit at a time? Aaron, any preference?
it seems like one at a time would be better because you wouldn't really have to, you wouldn't have the anxiety of trying to remember a whole bunch of new rules if you only had one or two new units that just had the brand, not brand new, but I mean rules that you really had to focus on instead of having to play a unit with reflexively.
Right.
But I can see the allure, and actually, I think it was before this game I was showing Nick some of my lists. They were basically, they wouldn't work, but I just took all these new things that I got and put them into one list.
Yeah, I remember looking at your Butcher 3 list and just thinking, oh my god, it's just all the shinies, and it's not going to work at all.
There's no synergy at all. Like I said, I can understand the allure of like this sort of like progressive rock and roll list of weirdness of just like a bunch of stuff thrown together and like stirred up.
Right. And hoping for the best.
Okay, well.
What about you, Nick?
Well, for me, it's do as I say, not as I do. Because I always play new lists with like a shit ton of new models in them and it's a bad idea. So like, I don't think you should do it. I think that the best way to do it is if you really want to just try out a new model, take a list that you already have that's good and then swap out something that isn't going to kill your list to try out a new model. I think that's the way you should. Yeah, now, I mean, that said, yeah, fuck it, you know.
You know, I find it interesting because there's going to always be cases where, you know, a single unit in a vacuum is a difficult thing to put in or out in a lot of cases. Like, for example, your Kayazi Assassins, they're great, but they're better when they're running with Kayazi Eliminators. And so now you have to say, okay, I'm going to take a list where I know it works, except that I need 14 points worth of Kayazi Assassins.
I don't
Assassins
know if that's necessarily true, but I would say that Eliminators are better in pairs.
Yes. Okay, in my case, most of the time, I add things one unit or one model at a time because I'm kind of OCD about playing painted most of the time. And so after I finish painting it, then it hits the table. And, I use, you know, the stuff I've painted before and then, you know, put that stuff on. But again, I'm not saying it's better or worse, just, that's just the way I do it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on
story,
to
it. I was actually fully painted, it just wasn't the right models.
Yes, you have a furry wrong eye, so. A furry snapjaw.
So yeah, so my proxies, for those looking at the pictures, are wrong eye was being proxied by John from Hermia John, snapjaw was being proxied by Lug from Brennan Lug, and the bull snapper was being proxied by Aegon Bunny.
As is appropriate.
One of the units of Eliminators was proxied by two Nissan Hunters.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So
very Chasm-esque, except that they were all painted.
Yes.
Yes. Not Chasm-esque at all. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Gavin.
They were, like, pleasing to look at.
So, Gavin, in a shocking turn of events, brought... it was actually a shocking turn of events, because he brought P. Morvana and E. Morvana.
He tried P. Morvana?
He's played her before, and she seems pretty legit, and so he's kind of trying more stuff out with her. And I think the pairing them together is kind of interesting.
Yeah. So what was in his Epic Morvana list?
In the Epic Morvana list, he had Double Stalker. The Stalker was being proxied by Pharaoh because he only has one. He had Gorax, Max Skinwalkers with the Alpha, Max Blood Trackers with no UA, Max Wolves with UA, two Gallows Groves, and a Black-Eyed Wayfarer.
Oh, that's an interesting list. Not a big deviation from his usual, though.
No, it's very standard. I mean, he has this one. He's also played, like, a variation with, like, Megalith before, and he's played a variation with the Woldrath before as well, but this is the one he likes.
There's also that one where you get war beasts that get free charges if the wolves hit something. And so the whole point is that you bring the wolves back from the feet, and then you can get charges off anyways, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, you're talking about the war wolves, the one-point guys.
Yes, yeah. The little attack dogs. Okay, and so what scenario were you guys playing?
We were playing, I believe it's called Supply and Demand. Scenario with a 12-inch circular zone in the middle of the table, and then there are enemy and friendly objectives on the corners.
Cool.
Which allow Warbeasts and Warjacks free charges if they're within 4 inches and uncontested.
Ah, so fuel and priority. So you have to destroy them before you can dominate.
Yes.
Oh, no, you have to destroy them only if your control range is within, which, hey, with Gorton, not a problem.
Yeah, with Gorton, I can be, like, halfway in the zone and no problem.
Yeah.
Fuck is fine.
Okay, so who won initiative?
Gavin won the die roll, and he chose to pick tableside. And based on the terrain, and also the fact that my list, well, actually that's not true. The Chaosy were actually kind of fast, but, having a Dwarf Caster, a Dwarf Colossal, it's pretty safe for him to let me go first because even second turn, I'm not going to range that much. So he chose the second turn, and because he wanted the side of the table that had a fence, just like basically just outside the kill box. It was pretty perfect.
Mm, yeah, good call. Okay, so why don't you talk about your deployment?
I deployed my Earthbreaker centrally, and then the assassins were off to the right so they could run in front of it and screen it without slowing down the Earthbreaker itself, because I wanted the Earthbreaker to be like 7 inches up.
Yeah, making it any slower is a bad idea.
Exactly. The Eliminators, each unit of Eliminators went on one flank, so they're on opposite sides of the table. Ryan Snapjaw and his buddies and their buddies went just to the left of the Earthbreaker. And they're pretty much there just to put spiny growth in the Earthbreaker every turn, more or less, and mm-hmm. then maybe get some work late game.
Okay.
And then Gordon went to the right of the Earthbreaker, the attack was with him, and then Silas and Thor were just kind of hiding behind the Earthbreaker for cover.
Cool. All right, and so Gavin's deployment, he basically put Jovan in the middle of the table, and then Stalkers flanking on either side. The Gorax was behind her, which makes sense, basically just a Fury battery. The Skinwalkers went to the left. Skinwalkers went to the left, and the Blackclad and the Wolves went to the right. And then all of the, one of the Gallowsgroves went in the middle, the other Gallowsgrove went in front of the Skinwalkers, and the Bloodtrackers went in front of the Wolves, and kind of in front of Morvana. And basically right next to his objective. God, that advanced deployment zone just gets bigger every time. It's insane.
Yeah, when you're going second, your advanced deploy is really far up the board.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I get turn one. So, turn one, Earthbreaker gets a focus. The first thing I do is Rupert walks up, gives the assassins stuff with Fearless. And then the assassins, they run up the table as far as they can and spread out just basically across the zone.
Hmm.
As far as they can forward. After that, the Eliminators run up the flanks, just up and up as far as they can, just kind of being, in position so they can't get charged by anything. Earthbreaker runs up the middle. Snapjaw runs up, just behind the cover of the columns. Wrong Eye moves up, puts Spiny on the Earthbreaker. Bull Snapper runs. Gorton walks forward, casts Solid Ground, puts Strength of Granite on the Earthbreaker, and the Tack and Thor just run forward.
Basically pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, standard first turn, okay. Running up, get in position, that kind of thing.
Yeah, your assassins actually managed to cover a fair amount of territory, so that's pretty good.
So circle turn one, the Gallows Grove shift forward 5 inches. Skinwalkers run forward and spread out. Well, the Alpha hangs back on the hill. The Blood Trackers advance forward, but don't get close enough to shoot anything. I think their range is 11 inches?
They only have 7-inch range guns, but also the assassins are all stealth, so...
Oh, good thing to bring up. If I were playing Circle, I would tell you what I had prayed. But do we know what was prayed?
Oh, sorry, yeah. They prayed the assassins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yes, they wouldn't have gotten nearly close enough. The wolves run up behind the blood trackers. The black clad moves towards the middle. Both the stalkers run up to the left, and they both warp for prowl. Morvana moves up and casts Fog of War and puts carnivore onto the skinwalkers. If I knew what carnivore was, I would clarify.
Carnivore is plus two mat, and whenever something with carnivore kills something, the caster heals.
Heals, okay, yep. And Gorax riles for an undetermined amount and runs.
The fact that Gotvana has carnivore and Scales of Fate is just so broken.
Well, not to mention the one that she heals whenever someone dies in your control area, period.
I know! It's
really? You needed that too? Honestly, like, yeah, she's so broken. Anyway, ridiculous. Yeah. Bitch fest! so that was Circle turn one. They didn't get much done either. Gavin didn't get much done either. So it was basically, you know, a positioning turn, getting the buffs out, that kind of thing. For my turn two, though, like, I'm not really liking, like, his stuff is pretty far away still. So I'm not thinking I'm going to get much done either. But, you know, I do it again. So, anyway, Gorton and Silas, they both upkeep my spells together. And then Gorton gives two to the Earthbreaker. The right Eliminators charge in at some Blood Trackers, basically just to get in there and be annoying, more than anything else. And so mm-hmm. they charge in. I think they kill three. So one of them misses a charge attack, but then hits a second one, and the first guy kills one, sidesteps, and kills another one. And very I totally nice. Forgot my sidestep with the first guy. Mm-hmm. And this is around the time when I start to screw things up, because my left Eliminators now, they just run straight over the Skinwalkers and then engage them from behind. And you'll find out why this is a bad idea in a couple seconds. the Assassins now charge in, and they take out three more Blood Trackers, and some of them just run up to engage other Blood Trackers and just try to engage some stuff and, you know, be annoying. Yeah. Then Wrong on Snapjaw go and they put Spiny on the Earthbreaker and Submerge, and then Ryle and do some other stuff, whatever, it doesn't really matter. They're really just a Spiny growth bot right
battery?
Now.
Battery? Yeah.
Thor gives the juice to the Earthbreaker, gives him boosted damage. And then Earthbreaker walks forward, fires some knockdown AoEs at one of the Skinwalkers who I think is in range, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And it turns out he's up at like half an inch. So then that deviates to the left, and it hits two of the Skinwalkers, one of my Eliminators, and the tree.
Oh.
And so, you know, that just sucks. I mean, and this is what I mean when I screwed up. Like, I had no reason to run those Eliminators first. Like, order of operations. I knew I was going to be firing out a bunch of AoEs, so I probably shouldn't have him out there. Everyone knows that Kazi just melts to AoEs, so, you know, that was a bad idea. And so the AoE, it hits those four things. It ends up doing one damage to each Skinwalker, kills the tree, and kills the Kaz. So,
that's not bad.
It's bad. Really, killing a tree isn't worth anything, because all I'm doing is giving Morvana an easier spell assassination.
Yeah, but they have to die anyways. You can't leave them on
eventually, but anyway.
Yeah.
So I kill my own assassin, that's great. And then, just because I wanted to, you know, make up for my past efficiencies and not be even stupider, I fire again. this time
what could possibly go wrong?
This time at a Skinwalker who is in range, I boost a hit and miss, and it deviates onto two more Kazi assassins. And it kills them both, obviously. So that was great. And at this point, Gorton has solid ground up, and he's so far back that they're completely out of range. So it's just, you know, order of operations, it's a nightmare. So then during this activation, my clock runs out before I've had a chance to activate Gorton or the attack. And so my turn's done, and Gorton is in the kill box, and, and that's not even the worst part. I mean, the kill box wasn't even that bad. I wasn't worried about scenario because I had an Earthbreaker in the zone. What I was worried about was, my board position, because Gorton was so far back. Now I'm so far away from anything. I'm not being able to get any use of my feet because I'm so far away.
Right.
And so that really sucks. And, that was terrible. So that was Mercenary's turn too.
So looking at the pictures, I love the fact that you've put all your tough assassins, like, within 3 inches of his tough denying Gallows Grove. Like, why didn't you kill it?
Again, you know, I didn't really care about killing it as much, because, again, when you kill the Grove, all you're really doing is giving Morvana the ability to place that anywhere in the control area and spell assassinate you.
Right, but the trade-off is the fact that as long as it's on the table, your assassins can't tough. Like, within his command, you lose tough. And so now he can just pop it in the... Well, you know, I'm sure we'll see what happens. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
Okay, so circle turn two. So Gavin's basically facing the fact that the mercenaries are not as slow as he's used to. Actually, I think this is the first time he's ever played against mercenaries. And anyways, he has a bunch of assassins and eliminators and all sorts of happy fun stuff trying to kill him. So he upkeeps Carnivore and drops Fog of War. And then the Black Clad moves up, sprays four assassins, actually manages to hit and kill three of them in a stunning turn of events. That's actually a bit of a surprise.
See, when you're shooting at them, they're only defense 14, so it's not so bad.
Ah, got it.
So he only needs sevens to hit, which is, you know, 50-50.
Yeah, he got slightly better than average. So then the wolves go, and four of them CMA one of the eliminators to death, and three more try to kill the other one, but they miss, and that's including Scale of Fate rerolls, so, you know, just didn't want to die. That seems to be the thing with eliminators. One of them just dies to a stiff breeze, and the second one just hangs in there
forever. It seems to be the way it goes with those guys. You always see one eliminator die right away, first turn kind of thing, and the other one, like, kills the caster or something. It never fails.
Spoilers!
He's so angry.
You killed my sister! So the Alpha and the two leftmost Skinwalkers do a CMA into the Eliminator, and they actually hit and kill. And the other three just walk forward and a bit towards the left to get good angles on the Earthbreaker, I'm sure. And then the Stalker walks up a bit. Both Stalkers walk up. They prowl. They warp for prowl to make them harder to hit. And then Kotvana decides to stay behind the fence and, just because, puts Fog of War back up. Because
that's what gives the Stalkers stealth.
Well, I know, but then why didn't he upkeep it in the first place?
Because he was going to be shooting blood trackers at assassins.
But I thought Fog of War was only friendly models.
No, it was everything.
Oh, get out of town, really? Yep. That's crazy. Okay, well, that explains that. Yeah, he's not as insane as I thought he was. So, back to you, Nick. Your assassins have basically melted. You're down to about four.
Yeah, no, that hurt. That losing that many assassins really hurt. I didn't like that. Now, the eliminators that were by the Skinwalkers, that was like a calculated risk. And I was okay with them killing her, because it was really just, that kind of maneuver was designed to just delay him for a turn and just make it really annoying. Right. And it worked brilliantly because those skinwalkers were like just barely out of the deployment zone, really. Like they'd really just, they'd advanced once is what they really got out of it. Right. Like, so I was reasonably happy. The only downside was that those three managed to get up because I killed one of my own eliminators. If that second eliminator had been there, they all would have been 6 inches back and just trying to deal with them, and which would have been just hilarious. So again, order activations is important and all that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so my turn. I've lost most of my assassins, but I'm going to just try to make the most out of it. I do some measuring and I'm pretty sure that Gordon is still too far back because of the last turn snafu, that mm-hmm. I'm not going to get anything out of his feet. So even if I charge forward, there's not going to be a single thing that's worth killing in his control area. Like, I'm not going to get one of the stalkers. So now that I'm sure of that, I do the rest of my turn. So, I think I might give some to the Earthbreaker. Doesn't matter. The Earthbreaker didn't do much. So the last remaining eliminator, it kills a wolf, then it misses another, and I forget about sidestep, which would have been amazing because sidestep with acrobatics is pretty fucking badass.
I thought about it
afterwards, like when I was looking at the pictures, where like she was like, there was like three wolves all surrounding her. She could have just totally like walked over top of them, gone in behind, and it just would have made everything just more of a nuisance. So I mean, learning tricks like that with things like eliminators is something that's really good. And so like, you know, if I killed one thing, I could have moved 2 inches. And it could have just got me into a really annoying position, which is good.
I think sidestep is really underrated because people think, well, it doesn't matter because you get one move for an inch and then another attack, but that might not necessarily kill anything. But that's not the point. The point is what you're driving at is that the person who is dealing with it has to make a decision whether they're going to keep going forward or they're going to kind of turn around to deal with it. And then that screws up that whole unit's activation the next turn.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Next up, Rupert gives the Assassin's Dirge of Mist, and that forces a bunch of command checks, which I like. But I think everyone passes, which is sad face. Also with the tree there, I'm not going to get any tough rolls, so I just decide that, shit, might as well do Dirge of Mist.
Good call.
Yeah. Next, the assassins pop their mini feet, and then they charge, and I get three of them under the stalker, and I get one of the black lad. So the one of them kills the black lad, no problem.
Nice.
And the three of them, they do just minor amounts of damage to the stalker, not really doing that much. I did also forget that Andravast has two attacks, so I might have gotten a little bit more, but he's still armor 17, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
The tactics ran forward into the zone and tried to get in screening positions for Gordon and the Earthbreaker. Gordon casts Rock Wall, in front of the Earthbreaker, in a place where I'm just trying to like put it where I can deny landing zones for the stalker. Cause I mean, it has Pathfinders, so it's going to charge over it anyway, but at least it'll make it more difficult for him to land anywhere. So anyway, after that, he charges forward just to get into the zone and he's straight up beside the Earthbreaker. Next up, Snapjaw charges in, kills the Skinwalker. Oh, sorry. Earthbreaker goes first. Earthbreaker gets suited up damage, walks forward just a bit to get, you know, to change his position with respect to the wall a bit. He fires some shots, and I think he only manages to kill one Skinwalker after all the shots. One problem I had this game is I was rolling really low for my nipple guns. Every single turn, I rolled either a one or a two for both nipple guns. I never rolled a three. Anyway, it's just kind of disappointing. And so, yeah, he only killed one Skinwalker in that turn, so it was pretty bad. Next up, Snapjaw charged into a Skinwalker and killed it, but his main purpose being there was to just block the charge lane of the other Stalker. And then Wrong Eye moved up, put Spiny on the Earthbreaker, and he did a boosted influence at a Skinwalker, but he missed. I needed an 8, which is annoying. And the Bullsnapper moved up in Rod for 3. So that was kind of just a positioning turn. I tried to get as much work out of my last remaining KSC as I could, but I didn't expect to get a whole lot. That eliminator, though, on that far flank is still just kicking ass over there. I love it.
So, quick question. Do you think it would have been better, having no idea what's going to happen on Gavin's turn, do you think it would have been better to put Spiny Growth on your... on Wrong Eye? Sorry, not on Wrong Eye. On Snapjaw, instead of on the Earthbreaker? Because you basically put the Earthbreaker in a position where he can't easily charge it. But Snapjaw is easily charged.
I was not going to not put it on the Earthbreaker, but I could have done Spiny instead of doing the boosted influence. And that might have been a good idea.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
No, just because you can do it twice, right? It's not upkeep.
But I think it's only range 6, and so I think Wrong Eye would have had to get a little bit too close for my comfort. Well, I guess I could have done it before he charged.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't think of it. But yeah, that would have been a good idea. It would have been a better use of his focus than missing an influence.
Right. Yeah.
Although
for sure.
I really would have liked to have gotten an influence off and then had a skinwalker, like maybe kill another skinwalker. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. But, and face the other direction so it can't even charge your guys.
Yeah, that too.
That's
yeah.
pretty good
Just
too.
Just like a poor man's TK.
Yep, exactly. Okay, Aaron?
So, circle turn three. I guess Gavin was trying to do stuff. I don't know. Morvona drops Fog of War, but upkeeps Carnivore again. The Skinwalkers charge and they kill Snapjaw.
Wow.
And again, he was there mainly to be a speed bump, so I was totally okay with this.
Yeah, he's done his job.
Right, because I didn't understand the rest of that sentence. The wolves activate, and five of them are able to CMA the last eliminator to death.
It took five of them.
Yeah, which...
Wow.
The eliminator dying from that is worth it.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes. He tied up like a 10-point unit for three turns.
Because, yeah, that's five attacks for 1.5 points.
And now they're so far away that they're not going to be able to get to the fight for, like, two more turns. So it's just like, you know, it's just, it's a win-win everywhere. You know what I mean? So, like, those eliminators are awesome. I love them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the wolves, five of them do a CMA, kill the eliminator, and one just walks and attacks one of the attack, but doesn't kill it, can't break the armor.
Armor 16.
Three others, CMA and assassin, who also gets killed. Two of the blood trackers that are in the back arc of one of the engaged assassins.
That is, one of the assassins that are engaged by the stalker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one aims, and they manage to take out two of the assassins on the stalker and use the other shots. I am assuming the quick work shots?
No, just, they only get quick work from melee attacks, but just, there was like four of them, and two of them killed the assassins, and then the other two shot the attack.
Oh, okay. Mm. And anyway, they kill one of the attack that's in the zone, the stalker, and then Morvana kills the other with Sunder Spirit shot through the tree. The left stalker walks over and kills the last engaging assassin. What would they need to hit on that?
They would be defense. I think Dirge miss up, so they would. He would have to hit a defense 17. So he needed like 11? An 11. Yeah, but he boosted. And I think pretty sure he did in the first hit.
Okay. Yeah, that seems like it would make sense.
I think stalkers are 6.
The final stalker gets primaled and charges at the Earthbreaker, and at dice minus 2, he is able to make a serious amount of damage, and filling the right side of the damage grid, and putting about 8 more on the left.
Wow,
that's a lot.
Pretty good. That's a very lot.
Yeah, it hurt, and like, again, this is another reason why not putting Spiny on the Earthbreaker was not an option.
Right. So how much damage did you do feedback onto him?
I forgot it was on there.
Oh.
I forgot about that part of the spine. I always forget shit like that. I had the armor. I remember the armor, obviously, but I just forgot about the feedback. So it would have been, he made, I think, 5 attacks. So it would have been 5d3.
5 to 15.
So that could have been significant. You know what I mean?
That
like, if he rolled 6 every time, like, if he rolled, like, say 6, like, the first 3 times, then he would have been, like, nervous about doing it anymore, because like that adds up.
If you're really lucky, you can actually cripple an aspect while he's trying
to kill
it,
right? Yeah, if you take that spirit or something, he's done.
Yeah. That's too bad that you forgot. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that's it.
Something I want to mention here was that I didn't even notice this till I looked at the pictures after when I was doing the write-up, but Gordon is actually currently engaged by the stalker. he could have just totally killed Gordon, like, easily. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I think he literally did not see him. if you look at the pictures, the angle is just right where the Earthbreaker's right arm is hanging right over top of Gordon, and I think Gavin actually didn't see him. He didn't realize he was there. And so he just, so the stalker just attacked the Earthbreaker the whole turn. But, yeah, Gordon was totally, you know, on death's door there. Like, he was almost dead. Like, he, because of the stalker, wouldn't even bat an eyelash at killing him. He would have killed him with 2 hits, probably. So that could have been bad.
That could have been very bad.
Yeah.
What could have happened,
lucky.
Too, is that, Gavin thought that Thor was Gordon. Because Thor is within his, line of sight.
It's possible.
He
also might have thought, that Gordon was just another one of the TAC. Because, TAC is a 3-man unit. 3-man units are kind of unusual. And so, And he had just killed two TAC members in front of Gorton. So he might have just thought, because they're both painted just tan, right? He might have just thought they were another TAC. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, it was I thought it was funny afterwards. I realized that the Stalker was actually engaging Gorton. He totally could have killed him.
But it didn't happen, Nick, so you get a round of payback. So what
Yes, happens? I get my payback, and how sweet it is. I don't know if you can tell from the pictures, but Gorton has some pretty good shenanigans coming up soon. So basically, I give three to the Earthbreaker. I drop Solid Ground, because all my assassins are dead. And mm-hmm. Silas upkeeps Strength of Granite on the Earthbreaker, making him PS24, which is pretty relevant.
Very, very legitimate, yes.
You know, most things are armor 30, so it doesn't really play.
Yeah.
That was sarcasm.
Yeah. Anyway, I some more order of activation stuff that I'm just dumb at. Rupert gives dirge to the TAC, and then he charges the Blood Tracker, which forces a command check on the Blood Tracker and on some wolves, and they both pass, obviously. And then the TAC goes, he moves up, forces a command check as well, and attacks and misses. Oh, Rupert killed the Blood Tracker, by the way. Good job, Rupert.
Hmm.
But the TAC misses.
With his bagpipes.
He's got a power 9 sword. It's okay. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so Rupert killed the Blood Tracker. The TAC swings and misses a wolf. Way to go, TAC. Then Gorton goes. And he walks forward just to the very edge of the Stalker's front arc. And I measure my control area just enough to get that other Stalker in my control area. Then I feet. And this is the important part. I pull everything towards me. So I right. get about half of the skinwalkers, I get about half the wolves, a couple blood trackers, and then the two stalkers. I move the skinwalkers in first. They all kind of just clump up against the objective when they slide. The stalker comes in, and he hits like basically within melee range of the Earthbreaker already. Nice. The stalker I'm engaged with just bumps into the Earthbreaker. The blood trackers just bump into stuff, bump into Rupert, bump into the tree, whatever. The wolves all kind of bump up onto the TAC, and they just kind of stand there. Then Gorton takes a swing at the Stalker, boosts damage, and does a couple points.
Hmm.
And camps one for armor 20, which I feel is okay. And so this is what I mean by order of activation. Like, there's no reason why I couldn't have just, like, done Rupert and the TAC after that to ensure they made their attack rolls kind of thing, because, like, the minus three defense is kind of a big deal. Minus three defense is really nice when you're trying to kill Stalkers. Let me tell you. so, now, Thor gives boosted damage to the Earthbreaker, which is badass. And then the Earthbreaker, because I have a crippled right arm, which is annoying, I turn him just perfectly so that both Stalkers are in the 90-degree arc of his uncrippled left arm, mm-hmm. And that the one that charged the Earthbreaker is in both arcs. Just because I don't want to rely on having that crippled arm be the one to kill the one engaging me, because... It's risky because, you know, I have to boost just to roll two dice and I still need a five to hit even when he's only defense 11. So it's just risky. So I make sure that I have the option of using my uncrippled arm on both stalkers, which kind of sucks because it turns me away from the skinwalkers, which means if I have extra focus after this, which I don't know if I will, I won't be able to attack them because they'll be my back arc.
Yeah, but you're engaging two heavies that are basically full health. I mean, what are the odds that you are going to kill both of them?
Well, the first thing I do is I do use my initial attack with a crippled arm, and I boost that one with one of my three focus, because I don't want to waste it. Anyway, so I boost that. I hit the five. I'm hitting now at dice plus seven boosted from Thor. Yeah. PS24 on armor 17 is dice plus 7. It's fucking phenomenal.
Holy snakes.
The first roll kills it. that was two dice because it was a crippled arm. So even with Thor's boost, it was only two dice. But if dice plus 7, I rolled well enough, dead. Just right off the board. Awesome. So I was like, well, shit. I'm going to mark the hell out of this focus now. So the other stalker I attack with my second initial does a shit ton of damage, and then the second attack kills it. So I only end up marking one focus. It's not too bad. I probably made the right decision because if I hadn't hit that five, I'd be pretty fucked having only a crippled arm in that side. So, I thought about that some more after this turn, and I thought what I probably should have done instead, though, was actually repair the right arm with Thor instead of tuning up. Because I probably didn't need boosted damage to kill them both.
Yeah. Apparently not.
And having an uncrippled arm would have been handy coming up soon. Anyway, and to end out the turn, Wrong Eye puts Spiny on Earthbreaker again, but then I try to do another boosted influence on a Skinwalker, and of course I miss again, although I actually would have hit it because I forgot the defense buff from Feet. It's funny how, like, I remember part of rules, and I remember rules sometimes, but not, like, all the time. It's just irritating. Yeah. And again, it's just like, you know, it's be sucking, so whatever. And Bull Snapper puts Spiny on Wrong Eye, and he riles a bit.
I mean, no, it's not because you suck. It's because of that other thing. Okay, so Gavin has now lost both of his heavies, and the Earthbreaker is still half functional, and on top of that, you still have a method of repairing it. So he's not in a particularly good way. So on that note, what he's basically has to decide is whether he's going to try to go for an assassination run or whether he's going to try to kill your Earthbreaker. And at this point, Gorton is pretty safe, so he decides, you know, for better or for worse, to try to take out the rest of your crap and clear the zone. So the Skinwalkers go first. Two of them manage to kill Wrong Eye with a CMA, and the other two smack on the Earthbreaker, but without their charge bonus, they don't actually manage to damage it. The Blood Trackers shuffle around a little bit. One of them fails to kill Rupert, which I'm sure he was super happy about. And the other one hits Gorton, does a couple points of damage. Morvana launches two Sunder Spirits through her spirit tree, her Gallows Grove, that's it, and manages to hit Gorton again, leaves him on 9 boxes. And at this point, he's kind of like, okay, maybe. So the wolves advance. One of them manages to get up to Gorton, but doesn't actually manage to wound him, so no problem there. And then the rest of them just kill the last member of the attack.
No,
and that's it.
They failed to kill him.
I wasn't aware that was possible. Something tried to kill the attack and failed?
Well, the thing is, he is still armor 16, and they're power 9, so without a charge, it's kind of tough for them.
Yeah. Fair enough.
But yeah, no, that, what was I going to mention? Oh, the wolves, they were kind of in a tough spot because, they couldn't charge, because if he'd given the charge order, there's 5 of them that were under the feet that could do nothing at all. They would have to just, they could only run.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. And so he didn't want to do that because he wanted them to get attacks in. And so instead he just advanced them all. And, basically half the unit was so far away that all they did was just slowly walk towards the zone, which was fine for me.
It's like you had, I don't know, eliminators back there tying them up for a long time.
It was great, honestly. Anyway, moving on. So my first turn, my fifth turn.
There we go. English is hard.
This is where things take a turn for the derp.
Wait. I thought we already hit that point. Wasn't that like turn 2?
Well, that was bad, but this is worse.
Okay.
Well, it's like he's been wading through derp the whole game, but that's where he fell in it.
Yeah, this is where I slipped and fell in the derp.
And now you're covered in derp.
Yeah, I'm covered in derp. Okay, so this is when basically I decide that I'm going to go for an assassination. But it turns out this was actually a very shitty assassination. And, so I made up a new word for that. It was the title of the article. It is, Assassination Walk. Because it's,
nice.
Such a bad assassination run that it's an assassination walk.
I like the trademark.
Yeah. basically, I think that the Earthbreaker might be within walking fire range of Morvana. But I want to be sure. And so, being the smart and intelligent and well-skilled professional player that I am, I decide to move up Gorton in order to get an accurate measurement onto Morvana in order to not risk my Earthbreaker. Now, it does sometimes seem like the Earthbreaker is the real caster in a dwarf list, but that's still pretty stupid.
Yeah, with 2 knockdown feats a turn.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty stupid. So anyway, I never claimed to be good at this game, so whatever. But anyway, so I move Gorton up, I measure my control area, and she's in range, she's definitely going to be within threat of the Earthbreaker. So the Earthbreaker has 3 focus. What I decide to do is I give the Earthbreaker boosted attack rolls from Thor, and then he walks up, and he fires a knockdown torpedo on her. He needs a 12 to hit. Because she has the defense, so she's defense 17. Wait, she's defense 17. Yeah, I'm a 5, so I need a 12 to hit. And of course I miss it, and it scatters wide, doesn't do anything. I shoot my crippled one at her, which I need boxcars, because it's even with boosted attack rolls, it's still just two dice, which sucks. Yeah. And that one misses as well, expectedly, and it does drift onto her, but I think it does like three damage, which puts her down to like two boxes. Oh yeah, I didn't mention that.
Wow.
Like, she has one fury on her right now, and she has like five boxes. So that's why I kind of started seeing red, because I saw it, like, when Morvana's low like that, you want to take advantage, because she's a hard bitch to kill. You know what I mean?
Yeah, really is.
Yeah, just a couple of different things I could have done differently. I'll continue what happened. So I missed both my torpedo shots, which sucks. And then I roll my nipple guns. I get one on the uncrippled side, and I get two on the
side.
So, like, that's the thing, is that if I'd rolled a three on the non-crippled side, there was still a good chance I would have killed her. Because, well, not a good chance, but there's a chance, right? Like, because if I can hit one of those hard 12s, it's going to do enough damage, she's going to have to transfer it. And if I hit another one, then she's dead. You know what I mean? So, like, it wasn't the shittiest assassin's run ever, but it was just not a good one. Just thinking about afterwards, what I decided, what I probably should have done, if I was going to go for the assassin's run, probably I shouldn't have done the assassin's run at all. But if I was going to do it, what I should have done was actually repair the right side. So then I would have had two shots at that 12 to hit on three dice.
Right. Yeah.
Because I would have just boosted them with focus. And if the first one knocked her down, then game over pretty much. You know, like, if either one of those knocks her down, then my nipple guns are almost definitely going to hit. And that is going to be enough to kill her, because she only had five boxes left upon transfer. So, like, all I needed was get that knockdown torpedo to hit. It would have been a way smarter to actually just repair in this case. I've discussed this before, I think, with you, where we've talked about the benefits of either doing tune-up attack rolls versus repairing a crippled arm. This case, I was wrong.
No question.
But yeah. Anyway, so after that, Rupert dirges again. He dirges the attack, and it forges two command checks on the wolves and one command check on the blood trackers. The wolves pass both of theirs, and the blood trackers fail. Yay!
Yay!
So that's all good. And that was my turn, and I fully expect to die right now, because of just where Gorton is. But anyway, you guys.
Yeah. Well, just to end the suspense, Gavin decides that he's got a bunch of things that can kill Gorton. He bunches them up, does a 1 8-man CMA, and leaves him on one box. And
then after that. Huzzah!
Yeah, and so after that, Govana just. Govana charges.
Well, you survived to be raped by his goat.
That's a victory of a sort. That's a victory of a sort. Really? That's a great picture at the end there.
It's such a clusterfuck. It's like his entire. It's basically what's left of his whole army, actually. stabbing him with spears. victory to Circle. You know, it was a well fought game. Not trying to take away anything from Gavin, but fuck, I've made so many stupid mistakes.
Yeah. So let's quickly motor through the review portion. We will start with Gavin, who we will rate in absentia, because we have no problems doing that. So why don't we start with his feat use? Morvana never bothered to feat.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't actually explicitly say this through most of the cast, but she was actually pretty low on health the whole time. That was because he was doing a lot of Scales of Fate. She was never, during this entire game, she was rarely above half health.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, at least you're keeping on his back foot.
Yep. No, it was good.
So there wasn't really a time that he should have feated.
No, he couldn't. He basically, he could have. If I was going to say a time when he should have feated, I think it should have been, this is knowing what happened in the future, but it probably should have been, the turn after my assassins charged in and killed six of his blood trackers. That would have been the best time to bring out the other six and then do their thing. Bring back those six that I just killed. Because his black lad killed three of my assassins, and then his stalker killed a bunch and whatever else. And like, they were down to like three men. He brought back those blood trackers now. I got nothing else to kill them now. They would really have come in handy if he had had that. So that is the best time I can think of when he maybe should have. But again, I mean, he was low health this whole time, so I can understand why he didn't.
Yeah, fair enough. Aaron, anything you want to add to the Morvana feat discussion?
No. The fact that, I mean, I think he was probably looking for a point where enough of the skinwalkers had died that he could feat and bring them back and then charge them on that same turn. But that just, probably because of the eliminators, it didn't happen. It never presented itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's probably part of it, because I never killed the Skinwalkers because they were so far away from the fight. and you're definitely right. I mean, Gavin really does love bringing back Skinwalkers, and I can understand it, because it's 1 point for a full health Skinwalker. That's pretty nice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no question.
One thing with Aaron though, is that they can't charge on the turn they come back. They can only...
Okay.
It's still legit.
They have to come back within Morvana's control?
It has to be within Morvana's control and within formation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, which means that if you kill the whole unit, then they don't come back at all.
All right, well, it's still a valid point, though, because I think you wanted to use those because they had a better chance of killing in melee rather than the blood trackers. They're not good in melee.
I disagree with that.
Well, they're not as good.
Yeah.
They're good against the prey.
They're better. Yeah.
Gorton is in the prey at that point.
Yeah.
Okay,
so basically Gavin didn't pop his feet. He did okay not popping his feet. So why don't we talk tactics? Aaron, how did you feel about Gavin's tactical performance?
It was pretty normal circle affair. Using the blood trackers to go up front to be a nuisance and holding his heavies back in reserve. However, it didn't really work out for him in that he didn't really get a whole lot of damage out of the wolves. Or the stalkers, true. Rather.
Part of it was he did not expect to lose two stalkers in one turn. Like, he was pretty taken aback by that. You know, understandably so.
Yeah.
I also think he made a mistake here, though. Like, I think that... I really think that he should have made sure he got both stalkers on Earthbreaker to make sure it died.
Mm. Well, that's what I'm saying, though, is because the routine that he has didn't work out the way it was supposed to, because of probably completely in part to the assassins moving up the board so quickly.
That definitely helped, but mostly it was actually the spiny growth. It was that armor 22 colossal. He's never faced a colossal with that high armor before. He assumed he'd be able to kill it with one stalker, but he was wrong.
What?
I think he thought he was going to kill it with one stalker.
That's ridiculous. He sent Getarix up against my storm walls, and he hasn't managed to wreck them in a single turn. So the fact, maybe he thought he would just do enough that it would be taken out of the fight. Like, if he crippled both arms, that would make sense.
I don't know. But anyway, I think that he should have used like something like the Gorax to try to kill that last assassin engaging a stalker, and then sent both stalkers in.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
I don't know. I think this was below average for Gavin. I would give him 2.
Well, for Gavin, certainly. This is not one of his better showings. But does that make him average overall, or were we thinking a 2 for his performance?
You're probably right. Maybe a 3.
Yeah. Aaron, you agree?
I think it is a little below average, but I'm not sure if that's because of how he positioned his units, how he used them, or just his inability to hit the high defense of the Eliminator, which held up the Skinwalkers, and then just overestimating the Stalker's abilities.
Yeah.
So I would probably lean more towards a 2.
What do you think, Nick? 2 or 3?
I don't think that the Eliminators and stuff were necessarily a problem with his tactics. I think I put him in a tough spot, and he just did what he could. So I think he still gets 3 with this.
Fair enough. So why don't we move on to scenario? The fact of the matter is that Gavin basically ignored the scenario. He did get some scenario points by your mistake.
He gets no credit for the scenario on this. He completely ignored it. He did not concentrate on killing models in the zone. He completely ignored it. It was a meaningless circle in the middle of the table for him.
Yeah. Plus a meaningless objective that he could have killed if he really wanted to, but, you know, he didn't bother.
Yep.
So are we thinking a 1 or a 0? Probably a 1.
Just a 1, yeah, just a 1.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he didn't abandon the zone. That would have been even worse.
Well,
I don't think that's a fault of Gavin's, because this scenario basically dictates everything running into the zone. Whether you're ignoring it or not, everything just happens to end up there.
This is a tough one to win on, just because...
Against a Colossal, for sure.
Yeah, the thing is, like, it's just one zone, and it's not that big. It's just basically, it usually turns to a mosh pit, and it's tough to clear that zone, I understand.
Yeah.
Still, he didn't try, so...
Yeah, yep, no question.
And there was definitely turns where he could have.
Mm-hmm. Alright, so, luck. Nick, you're on the receiving end. How was Gavin's luck?
It was not really... it certainly wasn't abominable, but he was taking a lot of Scales of Fate, so it's kind of hard to remember. just because, you know, it's everything's easier when you have two chances, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Really, Govana just, like, doesn't give a shit about luck. She's just like, yeah, fuck luck.
Yeah, exactly.
But I have to say that it was, you know.
You average. Have to say? Do you have to say?
Wah, wah. No, it was probably average. You know, it definitely wasn't, like, inordinately bad. You know, maybe just that one time that he CMA'd twice, he missed with six guys on Eliminator and then Tails of Fated and missed again. Yeah, he needed a five or a six, I forget now, but he missed it twice. So, that was pretty bad luck. But I mean, other than that, like, that was really the one time I can think of that he had bad luck.
Fair enough. Okay, so for time use, I think we can all agree that Gavin probably scored a zero on this.
We were playing 18-minute time turns. Now there's a little bit of history here, because Gavin doesn't like using the clock. He is probably our slowest player ever. We're trying to get him to speed up it, because it's really annoying to play a game that you start at like 7 and it goes to midnight. Like, nobody wants to play War Machine, the same War Machine game, for 5 hours. It's just not fun anymore. We're kind of forcing him to use the clock. So I was like, hey, Gavin, you want to do death clock or time turns? He was like, oh no, I'm just gonna play fast. which I responded, no. No, yeah. We have to play the clock. Because last time we didn't, we played till midnight. So I compromised. I was like, okay, fine, let's do 18-minute time turns for a 50-point game. That's a shit ton of time. It should be totally fine. You know, he ran out of time on every single turn. So, I mean, he definitely gets a zero for his time use, but he's getting better. And you know what? He might not have run on every turn, but he's still a very, you know, just a slow, calculating player. And there's nothing wrong with that. It just gets really annoying to play against if there's no time limit. Like, there has to be, because sometimes, you know, if there's no time limit, sometimes he just stands there looking at the board for 5 minutes. You know what I mean? And that's just not okay.
Well, 5 minutes is being generous.
It's just something you gotta get better at. That's all. And so, by making him play, even on a long clock, at least he's on a clock and it makes him not just stand there. And so, you know, that helps a lot. But, it's, you know, baby steps. So.
Well, I think we shouldn't all focus it on Gavin. Like, it's that's his problem and no one else's. I think as soon as you take away time terms from anybody,
definitely, no.
You have no reason to go quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I play remarkably slower when I'm not on a clock.
Yeah. And you know, for me at least, Gavin is a really good player. You know, he's one of the stronger players in our meta. He doesn't like going to tournaments because of the time turns. But if he could get better at playing on the clock, you know, he'd be really, really good. But as it is, every time we have a local tournament, he ends up clocking himself out. He loses by death clock or by,
and he doesn't
timing on time turns. Yeah, so I think holding him to it is, you know, it makes him a better player and it makes him more fun for everybody.
Well, and I mean, just required for my own personal sanity.
Oh, God, yes, no argument. I was going to say that saying that I'm going to play fast is kind of like saying I'm going to pull out. It's just, it's a bad idea. Don't do it. So.
Oh, my, Mark.
Okay, so on that note, derptitude. Nick, any derps of Gavin that you want to bring up?
Gavin's derps, huh?
Well, okay, not killing Gorton when he charged in the stalker—that was a derp.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. But none of us even talked about it. We didn't notice at all. I didn't notice it until I saw the pictures. it's just kind of funny. I guess it's a derp. Yeah, it qualifies.
Okay. I don't know if it does, because it really does sense that from that angle, physically, Gavin couldn't see him.
No, seriously though, Gorton was right underneath the shadow of the Earthbreaker's right arm. And so from the angle where Gavin would have been standing and looking at the board, I'm pretty sure he was completely eclipsed by it. Like, he just didn't see him.
Oh, I'm sure, but come on, guys. Your Warcaster is next to Colossal, and you're going to say that's convenient.
Where the other player's caster is. That's probably something you should know.
That in itself is a derp. But it's sort of like when, like, Christian missionaries would go to, like, you know, the barbaric tribe and tell them about Christianity. And then they would ask, well, if I didn't know about God, would I still go to hell? It's like, well, no. Why did you tell me?
That's
the situation here. Like, I didn't see the scenario. I didn't see that that line, so why should I be penalized for it? Okay. But no, I still do agree. I do agree that you should know where the caster is, because that's kind of important.
It's kind of important. It's insignificant, folks. Okay, so any other derps that are worth mentioning?
Well, not a derp, but I felt like I thought Gavin was going to charge my Earthbreaker on, like, turn two. Turn was that? Might have been, turn two. I think it's circle turn two. Yeah, circle turn two. I thought he was going to bring the Black Cloud up and then Hunter's Mark the Earthbreaker and then charge in, like, one or both Stalkers and kill it. He totally could have. Like, he had the range. All he needed to do was hit the Hunter's Mark and he would be fine. And he didn't do that. So, but I guess I can't call it a derp. It's just something he didn't see, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough.
And it could be that maybe he's not as good at measuring distances as I am, or like estimating distances.
Well, that's true of most people, actually. You're really good, so.
I'm okay. I mean, I like to toot my own horn, but yeah, I'm
awesome. Yeah, no, you're pretty damn good.
Well, and
okay.
the benefit of this scenario, too, is that because the action is kind of, it eventually bottlenecks at the center, what you have is this great 12-inch circle that you can use as reference.
Yeah, no, it comes in handy. Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, really, really useful.
And I mean, that was how I knew that I wouldn't be in range to charge and then feet on the stalker on turn 3 as well. So.
Right, yeah. Okay, so are we thinking a derp 1?
Sure.
Perfect. Let's move on to Nick. Nick, your feet got you 2 stalkers.
If there is anything that is a 5, then this has to be it for Gordon. Like, come on.
This was pretty damn good. You know, the only reason I would argue for a 4, and I'm not trying to disagree, it's a great feat used. You did a fantastic job. The only reason I would say a 4 is because, in theory, Gordon's feet could be used to push all of his models out of the zone and get you starting to score control points. And
possibly. I still would have to do something with that Grove.
And eventually it doesn't get pushed. And, you know, if you're going to, in this particular instance, getting to kill 2 stalkers, unquestionably a better use.
Yeah.
But there will be cases where you can use Gorton's feet and it will win you the game outright. Whereas in this case, it just got you a really heavily ahead on the attrition game.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and speaking of that, I mean, you know, I could have done something like that. Like, there's no reason why I couldn't have, say, you know, done the Earthbreaker first, killed the 1 stalker, and then feeded and pushed everything away. 8 inches, right? And so I probably could have gotten all the skinwalkers and the stalker and then pushed them all away. And then the Earthbreaker would have been safe for like 2 turns.
Yep. And you would have had 3, at least 2, possibly 3 control points in your pocket.
Yeah. The problem with that, though, is that second stalker is probably going to kill the Earthbreaker when it does get back.
Well, I won't disagree with you, but, you know, that's a.
It's just because it'll threaten me by so much and I can't stop it with a wall. It's tough.
Yeah, it's not an easy situation. But, okay, so, Aaron, what about you? Do you think this is an example of a 5 for the feat, or would you argue for a 4 just because of in potentia it could be better?
I don't think we should be arguing the potentiality of a feat, because I think that Nick used this exactly as it should have been used in this situation. Where if he had pushed the stalker, you know, even just 1 stalker, 8 inches away, like you already said, it's back in the game within 2 turns.
Yeah.
Destroying it outright, it's done. And then you actually,
no question.
You can actually move forward from that instead of having to deal with it. Like it's in the past now. You don't have to deal with it anymore.
You can move on with your life.
Yeah, you can move forward with potentially attempting to do either an assassination or try to, you know, hang on to, like a marathon of a game to try to get this win.
No, I think I agree with you.
I really think this is a 5. Because, what is that? 16 points or 18 points?
No, stalkers are 10. That's a 20-point swing.
20-point swing.
Yeah, wow. So boom. Like, I mean, that alone, from one model, taking out 20 points, that's fucking
crazy. I will take it.
Yeah. Okay, so congratulations, Nick. That was a 5. Nicely done. Now, for tactics, I'm leaning
this is
close
where we
to
start to
here.
Go the other direction. I did some bad stuff. I mean, okay, like, some of it was just order of operations, who I think deserves to be in the tactics section, mostly.
Yep.
As opposed to derp.
Yep.
Things like, you know, first turn or second turn, you know, killing my own eliminators was stupid because proper order of operations would have made sure that didn't happen. Killing the assassins was also stupid because, again, proper order of activations would have mean that Gordon would have been up there and solid ground would have prevented that damage. Just little things like that. Also, order of operations would have made it so Gordon was not in a kill box when my time went off. that's also kind of important. Those are some tactical problems which I did wrong, which are things I have to learn better. That's all. And I think it's squarely in tactics, not derp.
I agree.
What else?
Deciding
to go for that assassination walk was just stupid as well.
I'm almost tempted to call it an assassination limp. It was, it was pretty limp.
Yeah.
But definitely not an assassination run. That's a given. Okay, so Aaron, what do you think? Are we hovering around a 2 here? Maybe lower? Maybe a little bit higher?
No lower
maybe
than
much
a 2.
Lower?
I don't know. This, like, what is a 1 then?
Well, no, and here's why it's a 2 and not a 1. and it was said right off the top, half this list was units that you had never used.
Yeah.
If it was a bunch of units that you knew how to use, well, and sure then you still... if you still did the Order of Activations improperly with units that you'd used repeatedly, that's totally on you.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
This is brand new stuff that in theory and on paper are really, really good, but then you kind of fuck the Order of Activation up. That's just because you're not used to those units.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's a two and not a one.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to scenario. I think you did pretty well for the scenario, actually. Not fantastic, but...
Yeah, I mean, the killboxing thing was unfortunate, but I don't think that's necessarily my scenario so much.
No, that's just a time use.
Yeah, that was just a time use error.
Yeah. Also, it's a time use error because you guys had 18-minute time turns, but didn't think to use extensions because, you know,
I figured 18 minutes should be enough, right? So we didn't do it.
Oops.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, and it's kind of shameful, actually, because, like, I was pressuring him to be fast, and then I'm going over, you know what I mean? Like,
On that note, though, I would like to point out that, you know, you basically did what you had to do for the scenario, which was that you had Gorton towing in on the back edge and the Earthbreaker towing in on the back edge, and everything else was optional. You didn't do anything brilliant, you didn't do anything bad. I think this is a very solid three. Nothing particularly surprising.
And I even tried to use Rupert to try to help clear the zone and stuff, but just, you know, there was just no way. I didn't have enough attacks left. I lost too many assassins.
Yeah. Aaron, anything you want to add?
No. No. Okay. Well, actually, yes. We were sort of harping on Gavin for not attempting to do anything about the scenario, but in recital of the game, it didn't really seem like Nick was trying to go for the scenario that much either.
Well, the difference being is that Gavin had the tools available to get the scenario, whereas Nick really only had the tools in which to contest. Like, he was just holding the zone down. After he lost his assassins and his eliminators, there was nothing he had left to be able to clear the zone. Whereas Gavin had a crap ton of guys, and his guys really should have been up in the zone making the Earthbreaker's life a living hell, trying to clear it as quickly as he possibly could. He just didn't. Now, I'm not saying that would have been a better tactic for him, because
this would be way more relevant if Gavin was here to defend himself as well.
Yeah, of course.
It's true.
So,
yeah. It's too much pride.
Well, no, he just doesn't give a shit about podcasts.
Well, no, he was on the one time. It's just the fact that I think he's embarrassed of what he sounds like on the radio.
Maybe. So. Everyone sounds dumb. Get over it.
Exactly.
I sound like a fucking idiot, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it has nothing to do with the radio. It has to do with the vibration of our vocal cords inside of our skull.
Yeah, it is. All right. Oh, you vibrate.
All right. It must be. All right, we're going to stop that right there.
I'm sorry, Nick, to everybody who had to hear that.
Thank you. How did you feel about your luck?
Luck. I thought it was pretty bad. I was rolling tough rolls for my Chaozzi, although I shouldn't have been because the Gallows Grove. I guess I forgot about the whole removing tough thing, and apparently Gavin doesn't know. I don't know. But anyway, so I was rolling tough rolls for my Chaozzi that were near the trees dying, and I didn't pass a single one all game. So it didn't matter that I was cheating, but I did not pass a single tough roll all game, and so that was sad.
Nice. Ouroboros was keeping you honest, basically.
Yes.
Lady Luck. So is that a two or is it a one?
Well, there's that. There was my assassination walk that I needed a 12, which is a 60% chance. So I can't really complain about that too badly, about missing it.
Right.
One thing I wanted to get into with that was for that assassination run, if I had repaired my arm, I would have had two chances at 12, which would have made it a 40% run, is significantly better.
Yes.
If I just repaired the arm and then used focus to boost instead, that would have been pretty good. And so then I should have done that. But again, I didn't have my calculator at the time, so I couldn't.
Okay. And then for time use, I think we can both again agree that this was a zero where, you know, you used the time, just not well.
Well, I mean, I was still better than that. Out. So.
Okay. I'll give you a one.
Yeah.
All right. And then derptitude. I think we've kind of beaten this horse, but are we thinking it's a derp two for the mistakes or?
Well, let's see here. Okay. So the big mistakes were, one, just doing the assassination run. What else?
Well, there's the issue with Gorton's feet and how you place the Earthbreaker and stuff like that, but.
There's the timing derp. There was, basically putting Gorton in front of the Earthbreaker to check
for
my assassination run was just silliness. I don't know what I was thinking. Honestly, like, anyway. Yeah. But although, that said, I mean, if I had had him behind the Earthbreaker, now I have 4 Skinwalkers on me instead of 8 Wolves. So really, what's better? Right. I don't know.
Yeah.
The Skinwalkers had Carnivores, so, yeah.
Okay, so are we thinking Derp 1, Derp 2?
It's got to be at least 2, at least.
2? Yeah. Aaron, concurrent? Disagreement? Alright, so it is.
Jesus Christ.
So there we go. Thanks for the game, Nick. And Gavin, if you're listening, thank you for playing it.
I want to discuss Chaos the Assassins for a bit. Those guys are legit.
Please do. Yeah, they're awesome.
Aaron, you haven't used them yet. So basically, I borrowed Aaron's Chaos the Assassins, and I asked him, like, you know, I realized he hadn't actually used them yet, and I checked with him before and to see if it was okay if I popped the cherry for him.
I did say be gentle.
Yeah, I was not gentle. I lost the whole damn unit.
Did you pay for the cab ride home?
God, stop.
Anyway,
yeah, but those guys are awesome.
They are awesome, man. Like, I really, yeah. really liked them. They died really fast in this game, but I figure I probably am to blame for most of that. But they're good. I love the Chaos Assassins. When I looked at the card, I wasn't that impressed because, yeah, Defense 16 and Melee is good. And, yeah, Gang is good. And the mini feat is awesome. But what I wasn't crazy about was just this one power 10 attack. It just seems lackluster.
Right.
Yeah. And again, they didn't do much damage to the Warp Wolf. But again, you probably aren't going to be sending them after Warp Wolves. They did.
I hope not.
They did manage to kill the blood trackers they got in melee with, but then the bad part of that was that they needed the gang to hit those guys, but that left them kind of bunched up, and that allowed the black clad to spray for them in the next turn. So it's a little bit of a tricky situation because you really don't want to give people that opportunity to you know, you don't want to bunch them up because you know a blast is going to kill them or a spray is going to kill them, and so that's why they work better with Gorton, is because Gorton can solid ground them, and then they can bunch up and not be afraid of AoEs. But,
or, you know, hypothetically speaking, P.I. Roos could make them super tough. Just saying.
Yeah, but that's still not guaranteed. That's still a dice roll.
Well, of course, but it's a 50-50 dice roll. So
I would take solid ground over super tough with these most of the time. Because what you're afraid of is one AoE drifting on killing 6 of them. You know what I mean? Like, and solid ground just removes that.
That's true. But I don't think Kador has access to solid ground.
They may not. I don't know. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Gorton.
Yeah, I don't think they have any girded either. Now that I think about it,
they do
nothing that
I put them in a list with the Demolisher specifically because anything in base to base with the Demolisher is girded.
Yeah, yeah.
I had talked about it before and kind of came down to the realization that having a quad eliminators is probably better than having 10. Assassins, just because of space.
But you know what's better than that, Aaron? Both.
You are so right.
yeah, I know. Me and Aaron talked about this a little bit, where he was saying that he wanted to run one of the Kaz units with the Demolisher, so that they could get the girded bonus and all that. What I told him was that, you know, not the assassins. There's just too many of them. You're wasting your time. But it does make total sense to run like maybe just one unit of eliminators with that jack. And so then they can just like charge right over it because of acrobatics, right? And they can be safe from blast and safe from direct hit by being behind this jack as well. So that could be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. That's good thinking.
But again, you know, it would really only work with like one unit of eliminators because you can't really hide 4 models around a jack. It's just all it's doing is concentrating them. And I don't think that's necessarily good. But I don't know.
Okay. So before we sign off, why don't we talk a little bit about the painting table? Aaron, what do you got on the table these days?
Oh, all sorts of things.
You know, I love that when you answer this question, you're actually looking at your painting table.
And what's on it. No, I actually am, and I'm physically touching them now, but they're all in pieces. the aforementioned Demolisher is there. The UA for the Pikeman.
Oh, cool. You finally got it.
Not the Black Dragon, just the...
Oh, yeah, that's okay.
What else do I have? Not Hearn and John, the other mercenary one.
Oh, Dan and Blythe and Bull?
Dan and Blythe and Bull.
Yes, they cost more.
They do.
Yeah.
They're not as good as Ion and Holt, but still. The price was right. The Manowar Dragoon.
Shiny.
Drake McBain. What else do I have? And the Iron Fang Ulans. I have 4 of the 5 necessary.
Oh, very nice. I can't wait to see those guys.
And so...
Well, in a-
Convergent stuff. Enigma Foundry, full unit of Perforators, and Steel Soul Protector. Unfortunately, the Steel Soul is missing an arm, so I have to get that, and actually one of the Ulans is missing a leg, so that's something else I have to get. I was hoping I could get a streak of having complete units alive, but no, I failed twice. So the streak is broken.
All right. What about you, Nick? What do you got on the table these days?
I just finished Alexei and the Risen. Cool. So I just gotta finish with bases for those guys. They're almost done.
And next you're gonna put them up on the website, right?
I will. Yeah, they'll be up in a couple days. Cool. I don't know what I'm gonna do next. But currently on the table is Rocinante McBain. And also I also have Barton Damiano, but I'm probably gonna do McBain first of those. But yeah, so I'm thinking either McBain, Rocinante, or Steelheads next.
For me, I just finished my Judicator. I haven't based it yet, but that shouldn't take too long. So I put it aside temporarily, and on the painting table, I have every Warcaster I own from Menoth that I don't yet have painted. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 Warcasters all primed and waiting for paint, plus one Paladin of the Wall and Nicaea. So I'm going to get the Krios and Fiora done first, I think, and then after that we'll have to see. But I'm moving houses, so I'm going to have to paint a lot really quick so that I can put it away and then not have to look at it for a little while. It's going to be sad. Okay, well, that's it for us this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say to sign off?
Thank you for listening to Combo Smite. And if your opponent ever asks, what does Gordon's feet do? He's going to have a bad time.